All right. 1638 MK Chung Radio, Chinatown, Los Angeles. Cypher Boxing in the area. Once again.
Let's do it.
We're here at K Chung Studios. Me and my man Obi. Obi, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
It has been a busy month since we last talked to y'all. A lot of things have been going down. We're going to talk about the most recent happenings in boxing, and that by most recent, I mean yesterday, last night, Carson, California, home of so many Fight of the Year candidates, had another big card yesterday, and it included one of the more highly anticipated welterweight bouts in recent history, and that had to be because it had the US-UK rivalry. Right. It had two undefeated young hungry lions. We had Sean Porter from the United States versus Kell Brook from the United Kingdom. And Obi, what did you think about that fight?
Oh man, you know what, I do have to say that I had some mixed emotion about that fight.
I could kind of guess why. I felt the same.
Yeah. There was definitely some mixed emotion, especially. I will say one thing. I do like Kell as a fighter. I think that he's very precise as far as his timing.
He was really moving in there, wasn't he?
He was kind of fluid.
From the fights that I had seen of him before, especially the Mike Jones fight where he had a, no Carson Jones fight Carson Jones fight where he had a lot of problems with Carson. Right. I wasn't expecting him to look like he did yesterday. I'm almost thinking that he got to the States a little early. Because he didn't look like he had any kind of jet lag. It didn't look like any of the situation.
Yeah, none
the
of
the weight of it all was affecting.
Yeah, none of those types of symptoms at all whatsoever. I can't really take too much away from Kell. I will say this though, and this was a point that was also stated by Brian Kenny, and which you know I know that a lot of other people feel like this, but I do I can say that I think that Kell was actually there was some excessive holding on his part, and I think that was something that did make a difference in the fight. You know, Sean is I really like Sean as a fighter, but I think that Sean can be a little bit too wild at times. He throws he does throw some really crazy punches. He throws some good punches, and he's, you know, a guy is very strong, and he has some good knockout power.
Yes, he does have very good knockout power. And you know what? He was coming in fast and furious. I saw that, so I see what you're talking about when it comes to that.
Yeah. I think one of the things was that one of the parts of the plan for Sean to come on in, you know, work on the body, kind of slow down Kell as far as his lateral movement and so forth. But, I think that one thing that Sean, you know, I will say that one thing that he needs to work on, I will say is just being a little bit more calm, just being a little bit more picky with what he wants to throw, especially when he closes the distance. He closes the distance well, but then when he closes the distance, he's throwing some pretty crazy punches at times. Not all the punches are crazy. A lot of them are some really good shots, really clean shots, as well as, they're straight and they're controlled. But, you know, then, you know, at times he comes in, especially when he gets very frustrated, he throws some very uncontrolled punches.
Right, very very loopy. Went up this, and suffice to say, I've seen Sean Porter a couple of times. The last time was at the LA Sports Arena on the undercard of an Amir Khan fight, and this is the Sean Porter I remember.
Right,
the one who fought Kell Brook. This is the guy I remember. This is the guy that made my jaw drop when he took Devin Alexander.
Oh man,
to the tilt. And the way he controlled Devin Alexander with his aggression, with his overall, you know, Devin Alexander is a very strong guy, very good boxer, and he was made to look a level less than Sean Porter during their fight, and then it kind of it was solidified with his extremely dominating win over Pauly Malignaggi. I'm talking about Sean Porter still. So those two fights were the fights that changed everybody's mind from Porter being a fringe contender, maybe not a has-been who's still undefeated, to a guy at the top of the list.
right.
where people were talking about Mayweather, possible Pacquiao. You know, we're talking about all the big welterweights.
Right.
Kell Brook was just a stepping stone. And, you know, and a lot comes into play when you're talking about a guy that doesn't fight on American television that much. He was a domestic fighter in England.
Right.
He did. He had a lot of fans in England. He would actually attract up to 20,000 people to one of his fights. But we have a certain bias here in the United States against people who don't fight here. If we don't see you,
right.
and we see you in fighting in places just like England,
right.
well, we're not going to think that highly of you, even though you're undefeated, even though you've beaten some of the better opponents that you've, you know, that have gone to England to fight. Not a lot of people go there. So Kell Brook didn't have a lot behind him. This was Sean Porter's stepping stone fight to go into the stratosphere if he beat this guy. And I think Porter was a little bit overcome by the situation. The way he fought Malik Nagy, and I don't know if Malignaggi just made him look good,
right.
but Malignaggi was at the end of those punches to the point where they didn't look wild. They just looked gruesome and powerful.
Yeah, they did. They looked
gruesome and powerful. And I don't know if Brooks' team saw that, or Malignaggi supposedly gave Brooks some pointers. And maybe Malignaggi told him, stay in a little bit close. If he comes in throwing those, grab. Try not to avoid him.
Right.
Grab.
Or grab. Yeah.
Hold.
Yeah.
And it was excessive.
Right.
And it was negative. And it was to the point where I don't know if I want to see Kell Brook fight again. He's a champion.
Right.
But I don't, that kind of, it was a very smart move, but I know well-timed movement and jabs could have made that fight roll a little bit.
You know what, I'm going to go ahead and make a statement here, and you know, a lot of boxing fans are very, they're really into the technical aspects. They may agree, they may disagree. I really don't, I'm not going to say that I don't care, but what I am going to say, though, is that that fight reminded me a little bit of the Mayweather and Guerrero fight.
Yeah.
And I will say this, and I will go ahead and say this just because I, you know, that was one thing that I did notice, was there was some form of holding at times. It could have been called as a little bit excessive when Guerrero got in a little bit too close to Mayweather, and hey, you know what, things just made it a little bit too uncomfortable, and hey, you know, I need to grab and I need to pivot and get on out of here or something.
It's something that if faced with, and Guerrero was, and you know, Guerrero looked good against Mayweather. If Mayweather would have used a little bit more of his jab and a little bit more of his movement, he could have made that fight a lot better, but it looked a lot like that fight. It looked a lot like the Mayweather blueprint on how to deal with aggressive fighters. It looked like what Mayweather should have done against Maidana in their first fight was maybe hold a little bit, use your movement a little bit, don't stay so much in front of the opponent. I think Kell Brook did take a page out of the Mayweather handbook. He not only nullified Porter, but he frustrated Porter. I think a lot had to do with that cut in the sixth round that Porter had that they just couldn't get right. I mean, that says a lot about having a good cut, man. You know, a guy that could get in there, stop that cut. Because look at Kell Brook's cut. That didn't mess with him after that happened.
Right.
It didn't bleed profusely. He was able to get some coagulant on there. It clogged up, stopped bleeding.
Right.
But as you can see, once Porter took that cut, once Porter saw that blood, a lot more combinations were landing for Brook.
For Brook.
A lot of those 2-3 punch combinations, a lot of those jabs were just hitting their mark. You know, Porter was a little bit more apprehensive, if only for the fact that he had to keep clearing that blood out. He felt it. You know what I mean? And that's energy right there. He's literally bleeding that energy out. And I blame his corner for not being able to shut that down.
Right.
Throw the correct mix in there. So there was a lot of, and just the way that the bout was scored, I had it very close going into the end. And I think Brook pulled it out by at least a couple of rounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of those scores were kind of crazy. You know what I mean? 117, 111, 116, 111. And the funny part was, the only judge that saw it even was the judge from England,
exactly.
And I think the England guy felt the same way as we did, that the negative energy in that fight, what was nullifying the action in that fight, was Kell Brook holding a whole fucking lot.
Yeah, I agree. And I just wanted to take a quick back step, just in terms of the cut that Sean Porter had. I believe that you know, there's a lot to play as far as the psychological aspect and bleeding.
True.
And then you have you know, again, the frustration, because I will say that I think one thing that's really solid about Cal is when he saw Sean trying to close the distance, and a lot of times when Sean closes the distance, he likes to lunge.
Yeah.
So when you lunge, you have to look for that counter, and you have to look for it quick. And because he had the ability to go ahead and check that quickly right at the door before it walked through the front door, right at the doormat,
right.
This guy went ahead and
file done.
Basically had some very good timing. Very, very interesting timing.
I was very surprised by Cubbrook. He had a smart game plan. He stuck to it to a T. Never got flustered. Never got pulled into a brawl. Never got pulled into a situation that he didn't train for.
Right.
He seemed to be alert. He seemed to keep the fight at his rhythm. And he made Porter look wild.
Right.
And that's a lot. That has a lot to say about Cubbrook. Applying his game plan, sticking to it, and having the wherewithal, the intelligence to know that it was working for him and not bothering his opponent while he was making mistakes. And I think that was the best thing about Cal Brook. It's not so much that he won the fight, it's that he didn't lose the fight. He did land the more crisper, more solid blows, but I do not feel so good about his holding. But when you look at the way that the two cuts occurred, and that was from head clashes, you really can't take that much away from a man knowing what could happen if he got in close with the person that was so aggressive. And in fact, after the fight, Cal Brook sat down with Sky Sports, and now there's a big thing happening with Sky Sports. They've got something on their end for sure.
Cal Brook,
and here's the interview that they had with Cal Brook.
I can't believe it. It's been a long time coming. Lloyd Lineker did it last time, travelled to England and beat Curry, and I've come and did it now. We're born to do this. The emotion is unbelievable. I can't describe how I'm feeling.
What did you make of those scorecards? A judge from Leeds gives it a draw, the other two see it your way.
I'm not a judge, but the fact that I felt in control, I felt that I was catching with a cleaner shot. He was trying to come rough, hit me on the back of the head. I did what I needed to do. I scraped the win out, and I'm the champ, baby.
Did you get the feeling at that final bell? Yes, I have won this. It's mine.
Yeah, a fighter, when the bell rings, you can feel, if you've won or not. And I did feel that it was close, but I knew that I'd nicked it. And it was a scrappy fight, but the fact is, I did what I needed to do, and I'm the champion of the world.
He looked strong. You never really hurt him, but did you feel he kind of ran out of ideas the longer it went on?
It was a tough, tough, hard fight. I had a top nutritionist for this fight, Greg Marriott. I made me push on unbelievable. So I needed to dig in at times, but I've had the right fuel, trained hard for this fight. So I had to do 12 rounds and feel good.
You just burst into the top levels of one of the most lucrative divisions in boxing. Do you have any idea what is coming your way in the next year or two?
I can't believe it, honestly. I'm all them doors have opened what I kept telling you about. I know we're born to do this. I've come over here, to his backyard, from little England. I've come over here, and I'm the new baby. I'm the champ.
And Amir Khan in our studio, I'm sure he's just as happy as you are, because you two one day are getting paid, aren't you?
Listen, the British public want it. He'll probably think of something else. He'll probably say, I need to win another title, for the fight. But let me tell you, Queen Khan's getting it. He's been putting things on Twitter, bless him. Someone must have been telling him, best of luck. I know you don't like me. The fact that he's getting it. I know that the stewardess watching. Hey, listen, you're getting it next, boy. I'm the champ of the world, me. I'm the boy.
A wonderful, wonderful night. Kel, congratulations from every boxing fan in the UK. Well done.
Thank you, thank you. I just want to thank the fans.
Grateful.
Well, having said wait in the queue, he's now saying it's got to be you next.
Well, let's have it, man. Look, I love that fight. And I'm sure we'll be waiting for a phone call from his team. Kel seems confident. He wants to fight. I think he's just excited. He's talking a big game yet. Now he knows he's world champion. I really think he's not gonna want to fight me this quick. If he wants to fight, I'm ready.
Because the rumours were before the end of the year you're going to fight either Robert Guerrero, the former champion who's come back with a good win since losing to Floyd Mayweather, or maybe Devin Alexander, who lost his title to Sean Porter.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at the moment. Al Haymon, my advisors, looking at that. So we're thinking of maybe getting the fight somewhere abroad. But look, a fight with Cal Brook would be massive in the UK. And I'm not saying no to it. Well, Cal thought I was going to say no to that fight. I'm agreeing to it. Look, I'll take that fight. I mean, look, we'll take it with both hands. I'm a young fighter. I love boxing. I want to give the British fans what they want. And come on, let's get it on, man.
How much is it a decision of yours, or is it just left up to the team at the end of the day?
Well, you know, it's up to me as well as the team. I mean, we just want to see what's in the contract with Heyman and Golden Boy Promotions and Oscar and everyone. We'll have to sit down and talk, see if we can get the fight made. And if we can get the fight made, why not? I mean, look, I'm a fighter. I love these big fights. And I mean, I know what it's like. I've tasted it, what it's like, and it was going to be like in Wembley. So I know it's going to be an amazing fight if we can get that fight in Wembley, in the UK. But like I said, it's up to my team. But look, I'm ready. I mean, I'll take anyone. I mean, look, I know I've been talking about the Mayweather fight, Pacquiao fight, which I think are there still for me. But look, if a Cabrera fight's there for me, so why not? I'll take it with both hands.
You've been very respectful recently about him, but you don't seem to rub each other up the right way, do you?
Well, you know, it's, I think there's a... You know, I think Kel might be a little bit decent now because he's won a world title of his own. I mean, at first, I think he was a little bit upset that I had won like 2-3 world titles and he had won one, and really I didn't give him a day of time because I thought I was, well, at that time I was a level above him. But now I think now he's earned his shot. I think he has put a great fight on. He's won a good fight against Porter. So why not? We can get that fight done now. I mean, he's proven himself. So, you know, I think that he's answered all the questions. So, yeah, I'm going to sit down with my team, Heyman and Golden Boy Promotions, and see where we can go from here.
Ryan, is that a fight you'd like to see?
Oh, it's a massive fight. It's definitely a football stadium fight, without a doubt. You know, it goes back way back from when they sparred in the amateur days, and the rivalry's carried on ever since. And I think until they fight, the rivalry will carry on. And I think it's great for boxing if these two get it on.
How would you see it going? Can I ask you, with Amir next to you?
Of course you can. Of course you can. I think it's a great fight. Like I said, Kel will learn a hell of a lot from that fight tonight. And now he's proved himself world level. These two, when these fight, it's going to be a great fight. And the best man will win on the night. No, I believe, Amir Khan's here, and I believe if Kell Brook fights Amir Khan, I think Kell has the beating of Amir Khan. I just think his style and his timing and his accuracy is all wrong for Amir.
Oh my goodness gracious. What we have here, ladies and gentlemen, what...
Camera's this way. What? I'm surprised.
What has occurred is that the UK is now getting themselves ready for what may be the biggest fight in their history. Amir Khan versus Kell Brook. Amir Khan saying very positive things about Kell Brook. You know, embracing the challenge that Kell Brook has offered, and also giving and offering some compliments to Kell Brook and saying that Kell Brook's earned the shot. When you think about that fight, Obi, from a strategic standpoint, who do you believe has the advantage?
You know what, I'm going to say strongly, I'm leaning a bit more towards Amir Khan. And
yeah,
you know what, that,
me too.
And you know what, I will say that there is possibly some degree of biasness, and the reason being is because I cannot sit here and say that I've actually seen Kell Brook fight like 10 times. Now, if I saw him fight, maybe a few more times,
right,
and I can kind of take away some of his, you know, the pros and cons of his fight game, then I don't know, it could possibly be a different story. But as for right now, I'm going to go with Amir Khan. Reason being is I think that Amir is just a bit more craftier. He's really, you know, he's really sharp, really fast, really precise. And I don't think that he's going to rush in throwing, you know, really wild lunging punches. And I don't think he's going to get caught that easily. If he does get caught by Kell, it maybe it's an exchange or something like that, but I don't think he's going to have that type of game plan where he's trying to move in, close that distance, and run right into something.
I think Amir Khan with Virgil Hunter is the worst thing for Kell Brook at this point. I think Amir Khan has changed his game to really cover up his weaknesses, and by weaknesses, we're both talking about the same thing. We're talking about that chin.
Right.
I think the fight that he had he just recently had was a great fight and showing the evolution of his game plan, the evolution of his skills. He is still superiorly on point, but he's brought the aggression down a bit lower, the activity down a little bit more in really trying to add in his movement and his precise punching to really dictate the rhythm and what he's trying to do. So I think it's going to be a good fight for as long as it lasts. You know, Kell Brook showed himself to be very athletic, very on point with what his game plans are. So Virgil Hunter is definitely going to be, he's going to definitely have a game plan for Amir Khan to come in. I don't see Kell Brook. Kell Brook has a little punch, a little pop to his punch. I've seen him a bunch of times. So he doesn't really impress me with his power, but he does have power to really keep you on point, kind of keep you off him. Right. And if he could land something in the exchanges, I would be very surprised. He's not one that has the best, how you say, transition from defense to offense. When you fight somebody as good as Amir Khan, you're consistently getting hit with faster punches that you're normally encountered. So I think it's going to be based on that transition from defense to offense, how quick he can do that. And no matter what, if this fight is made, I believe this fight will outsell the George Groves Carl Froch fight, which I think was over 50,000 people at Wembley Stadium. I think they could get upwards of 80,000 people for this fight. I believe this is something that might lure Mayweather to the UK to fight the winner of this fight if it's made. Do you see any obstacles in this fight? I don't think there really are any obstacles to this fight. It's I believe Khan is a golden promoted fighter,
right?
But I don't believe he's a contractual golden boy promoted fighter. So I think he's just a fight-by-fight basis. I believe he signed with Al Haymon. I think Al Haymon sees something here with him and Kell Brook, and I don't think you can really ignore 80,000 paying fans for a possible matchup. And I think they'll do anything that they can to make this fight happen.
Okay. Quick question here. Who is managing Kell Brook right now?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. For him to be on this ticket, though, on Showtime, and for him to fight an Al Haymon fighter like Sean Porter, I think that has a lot to say about another Al Haymon fighter and Amir Khan having the ability to do the same thing and in a bigger one. The only thing I think stopping this would be Amir Khan being a little bit feeling like he's the A side and dictate the terms. Right. But I think what we heard in that Sky Sports commentary and that interview is a man that's willing to do this. I think this is a boon for Amir Khan to boost his status, to really show if he really wants to be in those Mayweather sweepstakes, he's got to show that he has the ability to generate an event. And this is something that'll definitely be a feather in his cap and something that he can use in negotiations with Mayweather.
Right. Right.
You know,
I totally agree.
And it's something that we'll look forward to. Kell Brook on the scene. Kell Brook, welterweight champion of the world out of UK. Him and his lady probably had a great time afterwards last night. He was wearing that UK flag proudly, as he should. Right. He stopped what everybody thought would be a bulldozer in Sean Porter. In fact, to the point where I believe the Ring magazine prognosticators, they usually have a bunch of boxing, what they call experts, talk about who they thought might win between Kell Brook, Sean Porter. 21 people for the Ring magazine picked Porter. 0 people picked Brook. So that shows you know, what the experts know. It shows you a lot of the bias that comes with being an American fighter, fighting a domestic product from the UK. And Kell Brook came and really made everybody take notice.
We're talking about people that are quote-unquote experts, right, in the field.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? It was really interesting, and, you know, I don't take this as being something that's precognitive or really intuitive, but I just felt like when the fight was about to begin, I just said to myself, well, hey, you know what? There can be a hunch here that Kell Brook might be able to upset a lot of Sean Porter fans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, just prior to watching that fight, I wasn't very experienced in, you know, catching a lot of Kell Brook's fights in the past. So, you know, I think that, man, this guy, you know, has a welterweight title now. I think that welterweight belt, And it's going to be very, very interesting.
Very, very,
you know, very soon come, I will say that this guy, you know, especially with Amir Khan, that would be a very interesting matchup.
I just hate, you know, it sucks too because the littlest things can turn off a boxing fan from a fighter. And Kell Brook, and I think the reason why he never had a lot of noise is he's not the most charismatic guy, you know what I mean? He's not the best talker, you know what I'm saying? As you can see, he's not the most aggressive fighter in the ring, but he's a young, athletic, hungry guy. The UK gets behind any product of theirs that goes out and shows and proves and gives them pride in the UK boxing scene. So I think he'll have a lot of followers behind him. I think there's definitely something around the corner.
Okay, there's a question that actually I need to pose to you, and that being that with a lot of UK fighters, do you notice that they're fairly calm and not too showy, not too rambunctious, I want to say that type of a fan type person or fan type personality that likes to, you know, have a very strong engagement with the crowd?
True, they're very humble, right. They're very polite. It's about class. I don't think what some would call obnoxious behavior is well accepted over there.
Right.
It's not something that pushes forward. I think you only have a couple of fighters from there that do it and do it correctly. You have Carl Froch.
Right.
I'm a very big fan of Carl Froch. He's very, very good talker. He can talk that shit with the best of them. And he can make it sting. He can make it hurt. People say he has ego. He's just extremely confident.
Right.
It shows in the way he talks. He's blunt. He's come forward. But, if you're going to do it, you got to do it right over there. They just don't accept any kind of trash talk. I think somebody who's on the borderline over there in England as far as acceptable obnoxious behavior is a guy by the name of Tyson Fury. Heavyweight out there. That guy, and the weird thing about Fury is that he's got that high pitched tone, but he talks shit like he's a James Bond villain. You know, it's almost like he's got a script writer, a ghostwriter write it. So it's ridiculous. It doesn't feel like it's coming from a genuine place, especially with that high pitched tone. You know, I cannot wait till Deontay finds his way to Tyson Fury, because that mix right there, or a Chris Areola Tyson Fury.
Oh wow!
Press conference.
Wow, interesting.
That I would pay to go to something like that. So you got some UK guys that can bring that heat,
right?
And I think that Kell Brook, if he wants to get big, if he were to get advisors, you know, so to speak, he would definitely have to talk to those guys about how to come across. But humility is a big thing when you come to those UK fighters. You know, it's the Queensberry rules. It's really where it comes from is England, where this boxing game comes from, where the rules, regulations come from bare knuckles to really having some kind of rules and regulations. That's where it comes from. It's England, and their fans are some of the most knowledgeable in the world. And when they've got somebody to get behind, I think they come in full force. When I saw Sean Porter last, it was Adam and Amir Khan fight, and it was great to be around that British contingent that kind of just takes over, and they're just shouting, singing, drinking, having a good time at these fights. I don't think there's anything better than to have somebody from that island really be a big draw and really bring that culture into the scene, because there's nothing but fun, there's nothing but excitement when those guys are involved.
Right.
You know, Ricky Hatton, whenever he was at a fight, that looked like it was him. that looked like it was going to be, like they were going to start lighting the shit on fire, like flares going to be shot off, you know what I mean? That brings us to other fights that have happened in the last month since we last talked to you, and one of those is our man Triple G.
Uh-oh.
Did you get to see that last fight? He fought a man by the name of Daniel Gill, who was also out of the UK. Tell me your thoughts on that fight.
Now, one quick question. I think Daniel Gill is originally Aussie.
Is he?
I want to say that he's originally from Tasmania.
He's from UK South. My bad. And no disrespect to any Australians. Listen, I do know Gill to be that way, but yeah, you are right. He is from Australia, from down under. He showed up to the fight to try to take the what was the coming out party for Gennadiy Golovkin in the big stage of Madison Square Garden.
Right.
They're trying to promote this, try to put him on that stage. Daniel Gill, a lot of people thought, would give Golovkin his best challenge to date.
What do you think he did?
Hey, man, you know what? I can't front at all whatsoever. I actually liked Daniel Gill as far as, like, certain aspects. That guy, if it weren't for him actually getting caught with the right, because the reason why he actually went down in the first place was he threw, and this is what ended the fight.
Third round.
He threw a right, and when he threw that right, he had his left hand down, and that was really the main reason why he got clocked. And, you know, when you're dealing with Triple G, I mean, you know, Triple G, here's the thing about this guy. He's not a very fast puncher, but the thing is, he's very precise, and he really knows how to time his punches.
He's fucking committed.
Exactly. He's totally committed. And the thing is you just can't. And the biggest thing that I forgot that I actually left out was he has TNT in his gloves.
He's got fucking bad intention.
Very, very bad intention.
Every time he throws. And that's the thing. He got smacked across the face, Golovkin, when he threw that knockout punch.
Yeah, he did.
He was throwing his punch already, but I remember saying, damn, and then damn. And the first damn was like, Gil landed the best punch of the night for himself. Right. And then the second damn was like, and he still got knocked the fuck down.
Right, right, right. But you know what? I want to say that if Gil was a little bit sharper, you know, just if he just takes a step back and just works a little bit more, becomes a little bit more fundamentally sounder, just gets his fundamentals more involved, I think that this guy could actually really go far. When I saw him opening up the second round, this guy had some head movement and some razzle dazzle that actually, you know, I had to actually step up and get out of my chair for a second, because I said, look, this guy basically, he just made Triple G miss maybe about 7 or 8 times, if not 9 times. What did you think about that?
It really was what I believe would take Daniel Gill the distance was his movement. He's very athletic. He's very good at keeping his distance. And it was something that definitely showed. He was doing very good in the fight up until he got knocked the fuck out.
Exactly.
You know, that movement, he was pushing Golovkin on his back foot. And I think he showed a lot of what people that don't buy into the Golovkin hype. Mm-hmm. I think he showed a lot of what people saw. Golovkin's there to be hit. When he comes in, he can leave his head open. He is definitely open for the short, crisp punches on the inside, because he does kind of lead with his head a little bit. He's not very good at fighting from the back foot. When Gil was able to force him back, Gil felt confident and was definitely, you know, rewarded for that confidence by keeping Golovkin on his back foot. And up until that third round, he was doing good. But there's an inevitability that comes whenever Golovkin fights. You know, you're just waiting for the hammer to drop. And there were punches throughout the 3 rounds that made me believe it was only a matter of time. And whenever Gil would get on those ropes, I'm like, did you see any of the tape of the guy before you fought him?
Thank you.
Did you see any tape? Did you want to just put your head on the platter and wait for it to go? And that's what happened at the end. I was like, you got to keep it. If he kept it in the center, who knows what he could have
done? Right, exactly.
Who knows? With that movement...
You said it all. The only thing I can say right now is just give you 100% support off of what you just stated. The big thing was the movement. When you stall and you're stationary with Triple G, that's when he turns into the Mad Hatter. That's when he turns into Freddy.
Yo, Freddy.
That's what he does.
Freddy Myers Voorhees.
Freddy Myers Voorhees,
man. He will kill you. He's not the fastest, but he gets to where he's been when he needs to get there, and then you're just another notch on his belt. Daniel Gill, rest in peace. I mean that only in that fight. Daniel Gill shown and proved, but it only took 3 rounds for Golovkin to take him out. The myth of Golovkin is just growing. The people love to see a guy that stops the fight.
Right.
There's nothing better than hearing Golovkin talk after a fight, because he sounds like Ivan Drago.
Right.
He talks, He talks with that humility, but at the same time, you can hear the confidence. He treats this as a job. He treats this as what he gets paid to do. And when he gets in there, he's all fucking business. You don't see him smile. He's in his zone. He wants to get it done, and he always gets it done. I believe this is the 8th knockout in a row. Daniel Gill, just another one on the list. Who do you believe Golovkin fights next? He wants to unify the middleweight division. The other two champions are Cotto. Oh no, I think Cotto's the other champion. I think there might be an interim champ around there, but he's also thinking about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Okay. Who do you think out of those two guys gives him the harder fight?
You know what, just from you know what, I actually had a couple of the things on my head that I wanted to express, just about the Gill fight, but I want to say that Julio Cesar Chavez would probably, I feel like he would give him a better fight, and the only reason why I would say that is I just think that, you know, I like the way Julio Cesar Chavez exercises his spatial intelligence, and I like how he stays away with the jab. That's what I will say.
His last fight, to me, he looked fantastic.
Oh, man.
I don't think there's a middleweight out there that is stronger than Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I don't think there's a middleweight out there that has a chin like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I don't think he's the biggest puncher, but it's an accumulative effect.
Right.
He's got his father's DNA in the fact that he goes to the body so well. I don't think someone like Golovkin could really take this fight for granted. I believe Golovkin wants that fight to challenge himself. Right. You know, by fight time, I believe Cesar Chavez is a fucking light heavyweight almost a cruiserweight. He'll move upwards of 20 pounds from the time that they take the weight. So
right.
I believe it'll be a great challenge. I think Cotto will get fucked up.
Yeah, you know,
he'll get fucked up.
I don't think that Miguel is ready for that fight just yet. I think that he needs to take, you know, a couple more fights, and I really think that he needs to study the tape, because you have to have that movement, you have to have that head movement, and you have to be prepared for those bombs that are going to come at you.
That's
and where
the
they're going to come, because you know what the thing is this guy Triple G, he'll take you out with a body punch,
fucking concussion.
Exactly.
Who gets hit in the fucking face and throws a knockout punch at the same time? That to me was the craziest part of that. When they showed the slow motion, I was like, he got fucking hit so hard, and he was still committed to the punch, to the point where the hit was just glancing. It was laser pinpoint accuracy, because he was looking right at the chin when he landed it.
Right.
He rocked that chin. Right. As you know, you can't grow a muscle on your chin to make you any less chinny.
Right.
And Gill is not one to get fucking knocked out, you know. And he didn't want to go.
Yeah.
He didn't want to go any further. You know, it was only a matter of time after that. Triple G makes you think.
Better of
the situation.
I was actually a little bit upset, and I wasn't startled, but you know, when Daniel actually got up from the mat, it seemed like he was really working on getting his equilibrium together. He was really working on it, but then, you know, by the time I heard, I'm trying to think of the referee, but by the time the referee went ahead and counted to about 7-8, I said, nah, he's not going to go any further. I'm sorry. But you know what? I actually really like this dude, Daniel.
No,
I don't know really what it is about him, but I'll tell you, man, for some reason, that second round, the beginning of that second round, he just really impressed me. What the fuck?
He touched fucking Genevieve Golovkin, and you're right, man. He's got a little razzle dazzle to him. If he would have kept it in the middle of the ring, circled as much as fucking possible, use those ropes as if they were the edges of a cliff, and stayed as far away from possible as he could, I believe he could have made this fight last a lot longer. I'm not talking about him knocking Genevieve out, but there was definitely a plan there that he could have applied to maximize, you know, the reward of the situation. That was the belt that Genevieve have, and I do want to see him in the future. He was a highly touted prospect coming in.
Definitely.
He's from Australia. You know, there's not a lot of big Australian fighters out there, but the ones that are there are fundamentally sound.
Right.
I think New Zealand and Australia have those kind of boxers there, and it's definitely made me want to look down under, see what else they got going, else they got bubbling, you know.
Okay, I got one really quick question before we go ahead and move on to the other fights.
Sure.
There was a guy, I'm trying to think of the guy who actually fought Gabriel Rosado last. Was it Kid Chocolate?
Oh, it was. Rosado. Okay,
that was another middleweight that actually came through my head while you were asking me that question. Now, Kid Chocolate, I don't really think he poses too much of a threat for Triple G, but I just wanted to go ahead and throw that name around and see if he came up with any ideas, any thoughts.
I think Kid Chocolate is going to avoid Triple G as long as possible because of what you said. I think he got tested by Gabriel Rosado, and Rosado was the one that went the longest with Triple G, I believe, in recent memory.
Yeah, you're right.
The only reason that fight got stopped was from a cut. Same thing that stopped it versus the Pullen fight. And Rosado was banging with Triple G. You know, a tough kid, Philly kid.
Right.
And he came and showed and proved. And I think Quillen was about to be overcome in that fight, I believe, with Rosado when they stopped that fight. I think Quillen has shown a little bit of that, you know, he doesn't like to get punched a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's a guy that doesn't want to be in that battle. He wants to look pretty when he fights.
Right.
And I don't think he is at that level where he can stop the onslaught or use the onslaught of a Gennadiy Golovkin to find that next level of his ability. I think he needs to keep building on the confidence that he already had. He's a very confident guy. He likes to talk a lot of shit. He likes to call people out. But I think Triple G is one person where he's going to use the, well, my promoter makes the fight, so whatever he says is right. But it would be beneficial to him to be as far away as possible from Triple G and see if Triple G can run into some more adversity to show more kinks in the armor that Quillen and his team can train and exploit if they ever do find themselves in a position where they're on the corner facing Triple G. So I don't think Quillen has that big of a chance.
I think
Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. would be the best case scenario to come up next.
One more quick name. What about Andre Ward?
I would favor Andre Ward in that fight. Yeah. I would favor Andre Ward in that fight because of that jab, that piston-like jab that he showed in the last fight he fought. And I don't even remember the last fight he fought. That's how long ago it was.
That was, I think, October. I think it was October, November
Andre
last
Ward
year.
Andre Ward is actually a boxing commentator now.
Right.
He's not a boxer anymore. When you don't fight for like a year and a half.
Right.
He lost his belt. That was the belt that Sakio Bika and Durrell were fighting for yesterday. So he was stripped of the belt. He's now been served with a $10 million defamation lawsuit by his promoter. So he's got a lot of other fights outside of the ring that he has to look at before. I think Ward might have agreed to a fight. I'm not sure what that fight is. I'll actually check Google for right now. But him versus Golovkin, I would favor Ward only because Ward is smart. I think Ward would tie up Golovkin as much as possible. I think he would use that jab to affect Golovkin's rhythm. And I think if it got in close, I just don't see how Golovkin can neutralize all of the strengths that Ward brings to the table.
Okay, you know what? Just one quick thing here. I want to take 2.5 steps back.
Okay.
Sakio Bika took the belt from Andre Ward?
No.
Okay, what happened with that?
WBC stripped him
of
the belt because of lack of activity.
Ah.
And Sakio Bika versus Durrell was for that belt that was stripped from him.
Okay.
So it's hard to really recognize either man as champion since it was stripped from the champion, but that just shows you what Andre Ward's going through with his promoter. And all these other things that are happening outside of the ring that people really don't give a fuck about. You just got to stay busy. You know?
Right. Now, since we're talking about Sakio Bika and Andre Durrell?
Anthony Durrell.
I'm sorry.
What did you
think about that fight?
That was ugly, man. Sakio Bika is my favorite fighter. Is not something you hear a lot.
Right.
And you're not going to hear it from me. And the reason why I make that statement is because it's just ugly, man.
Yeah, he's
a
bit nasty.
Low blows,
yeah.
Just elbows, just headbutts. Yeah. Sakio Bika uses every hard point in his body to try to make a connect.
Yeah, you fight that guy. And it's guaranteed that you're going to be on the mat. You're going to be on the canvas 2 or 3 times, and it's not going to be from a punch.
Right. You really got to work on your takedown defense when you're going to be in a boxing match with Sakio Bika. It's ridiculous, but Durrell made it through it.
Oh, man.
And we really have to give props to Durrell because I believe he is the second cancer survivor in the last 2 weeks exactly. to win a world championship.
And the other one was the commentator of the fight, and that was Daniel Jacobs.
That is correct.
And you know what? I have to take off my hat to that dude.
To both of those guys. It's a wonderful thing, and it kind of shows you, you know, what the human spirit, you know, what you can really do.
Right.
When you fight it out, you know what I mean? Right. The survival instinct is large, and he took it to another level where now he's a champion.
Right.
He's part of the Durrell brothers. He's got Ward in his sights now, I believe. If Ward were to come back, Durrell's put himself in the Ward sweepstakes along with everybody else, and I think it plays a lot. You know, you learn a lot. That was his second fight with Bika, Durrell's second fight with Bika. The first fight ended in a very controversial draw, so I know that he's happy to get that monkey off his back, you know, and now he's been called the winner against Sakio Bika, and now he doesn't have to worry about that draw that he had to Sakio Bika. He doesn't have to look at that anymore on his right. record and be sad about that. Right. He's definitely worked through that, and now he's got that win over the only, you know, over the only guy that ever got anything other than a loss from him, and I think he goes forward with this. I think it's a great story, and I think it's something that Showtime's going to run with to get some good matches for the kid.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I thought that the beginning of that fight, the first 2 seconds of that round, I thought that Durrell was going to take Sakio Bika's head off. Jeez,
you could see the built-up, the pent-up anger that he had from the last fight. But, man, Sakio Bika just knows how to turn everything ugly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just everything. Yeah. Every fight he's in is just like, it's cringeworthy. It's cringeworthy, you know?
Right.
And the only person I want to see Sakio Bika fight is like a... is if he could drop some weight, is I would love to see him fight Maidana, because then that would be a fucking mud wrestling match. You know what I'm saying? Like, that would be the most ridiculous fouls in the history of boxing. Yeah. You know, if I ever saw a fight.
Well, you know what? If he goes ahead and he fights Maidana, I'm just saying, you know, we're just talking. This is all theoretical.
Theoretical.
It's all theoretical and hypothetical. But the thing is, if he drops enough weight to fight Maidana, now you know Matisse is going to want to get a little piece of that. And Matisse might just knock his ass out.
Yo, I can see that. Matisse, man, I can't wait to see him come back in the mix. I can't wait to see a lot of those bombers come back in the mix. Were you able to see the last Sergey Kovalev fight?
Yes, I did.
It was a brief encounter.
Yeah, that was very short.
The Punisher.
Right.
Sergey Kovalev. We've got about 5 minutes. Let's talk about that Kovalev fight. What did you think about that Kovalev fight?
You know, I'm actually trying to recall exactly. It's just a little bit blurry for me at this moment, but I will say that...
he was down in the first round.
Yeah, he was. But you know what that was from? Okay, now you're actually bringing my memories back.
There it is.
He, from what I thought, and the reason why he actually fell to the canvas was I thought that his opponent actually stepped on his toes. I thought that was a possibility. I thought that was a very high possibility. But you know, when I think Sergey came back in it was either the second round or the third round, and it was pretty much, you know, the guy pretty much signed his death certificate.
It was the second round. It was a step on the toes. However, he did land a scoring blow at the same time,
right,
so
right.
It was up to the discretion of the referee as to whether
a knockdown
or slip. He called it a knockdown,
right.
And that was the last we heard of the challenger to Kovalev. Kovalev immediately got up. He didn't show anywhere a tear from the knockdown, and he came back, and I believe he won with a body blow.
Yeah, you're right. And I want to say that it was, I think it might have been a right to the ribs, something like that.
It was that, yeah.
Could be wrong.
And you know, you talk to any fighter.
Right.
They'll take 10 shots to the head over one shot to the liver. Because there's really no pain like that shot.
Right.
And my man didn't really want much more after that.
Right.
Soon after the fight was called, Kovalev is now the man. Kovalev is the guy outside of Curtis Stevenson,
right,
where it comes to that super middleweight division, and Bernard Hopkins is going to fight him. Bernard Hopkins is going to be 2 months away from his 50th birthday when he fights the hardest puncher in the division. Are you worried for Bernard Hopkins?
Yes, I am. Yes. Let me say this. This is definitely a dual answer, yes and no. And the yes part of it is because sometimes I feel like Bernard takes too many shots. And that's what I think. And I think that Sergey Kovalev has that, he has that stick of dynamite that is, you know, that is something that you haven't, that we haven't seen
ages at that division. I don't think ever. I don't think, and now they've got two, Curtis Stevenson and Kovalev.
Right.
And I'm, you know, but see, this is where I believe of all the boxers in this era, there's two that you can, well, there's three or four you could call all-time greats if you really wanted to, but the only one you're probably not going to get any complaints from the old school about,
right,
calling an all-time great, especially after this announcement was made, is Bernard Hopkins.
Right.
You're talking about a guy that fights the best at his weight. He wants to unify the belts at this weight. He's fighting the biggest challenge out there, the most dangerous opponent out there.
Right.
And no matter what happens, I think Hopkins, he's an all-time great with this pick.
Right, right, right.
An all-time great. And I'm very worried for him, but it's when you're worried for him that he really shines. And it reminds me of the Kelly Pavlik. When he called Kelly Pavlik out, I was very worried. Pavlik was a shotgun in each hand, knocking people out. Bernard went in there and sunned him. You know what I'm saying? And changed Pavlik's whole trajectory.
Right.
Stole his mojo, stole everything about him. Right. And who's to say he can't do that to Kovalev? Kovalev, to me, though, is a lot more seasoned. As an amateur, looks so calm in there that who knows, man.
I think one of the keys to, you know, fighting Sergey is, you know, I believe that you have to keep your space and your distance, and there just has to be some really extraordinary movement so you can frustrate the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you make people miss, you make people tired, especially when they're throwing bombs. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't see something like this. I don't see Bernard actually ending this fight. I wouldn't say in any early rounds. If Bernard actually did in the fight, I see it definitely in a lot of rounds.
Make the choice right now. Bernard Hopkins, Sergey Kovalev. Who you like?
Oh, I'm going to go with B-Hop.
Yeah. I got to go with B-Hop myself too, yeah, man. Yeah. It's just, the guy's almost 50 years old, still fight. Yeah. I don't want to be on the wrong side of this pick, but I'm telling you, I see another Pavlik. I see him changing distances, and like you said, the more he makes the kid miss, the more tired he's gonna get, and the more he's gonna be applying whatever he wants to apply in there.
There you go. It's his craftiness. What makes him unique is just his craftiness in the ring. That's what really gives a lot of our boxers the edge. You have to be crafty, and you have to put combinations together. I won't even say just combination punches, but you have to put certain things together to create the surprise element, the element of surprise.
True that. And you know what? He shouldn't even be called the alien. He should be called the scientist.
Right.
Bernard Hopkins. And you just talked to the two scientists of Crooked Vision this week. That was a quick hour, man.
That was. We can go for like 2 hours
right
now.
We can go for 2 hours. No problem, right?
Can we do it? No, I'm just joking.
I'm telling y'all, this is what we like to talk about, and this is how we talk about it every other week. K-Chung Radio, 1630 AM, Chinatown, Los Angeles. Obi, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much, Louism. Remember, catch us on
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Get at us. We'll get back
Cypher
at you.
Cypher Boxing.
Cypher Boxing in the area. We love y'all. Thank you so much for listening. We see y'all again.
Thank you, audience.
I think of Michael Cera. I might be Jonah Hill. I might be awkward still. I might be out to kill. I might be at the Audi trying to score with a whore named Becca. Only had two shots and I'm throwing up the liquor. George Michael Jr., she gon' let me smash maybe.
Yes.
After she see the video for daily. After she see the money I ain't making.
Yeah.
After she see the way I make my bacon. Smooth nigga rapping, that's not me. I could lose my car keys faster than Nando moving pianos. Y'all can still get duffed like McLovin. I'm hard cousin, y'all some egg McMuffins. Something, nigga, I ain't bluffing. Always money in the business, that banana stand budget.
That's cash.
Did you get that? You didn't? Well, then you didn't listen. I think I'm Michael Cera. Yeah. I think I'm Michael Cera.
Best singer ever.
I think I'm Michael Cera.
So much money.
Yeah. I think I'm Michael Cera. Nigga. First two, coming with that OE brew. Over Miller with my nigga, oh, Buster got the juice. Gang, gang, got enough, Elder sir, the truth. She turned up more than me. Bone crusher, you bone suckers can never stop me. Just steal the stream and watch me. And as I practice using all this force in my garage, having dreams about throwing maybe mixed with Ann and the Minaj. Four bars harder than songs by doing the most Jones. Rolling Stone, getting messages like I got four phones. Air grown, I'm a man, homes. Trying to bone bad bitches, then I'm gone. I think I'm Michael Cera. I think I'm Michael Cera. Motherfucker. I think I'm Michael Cera. I think I'm Michael Cera.
Yes,
bitch.
Yes.
Awful kid.
Nigga, I'm super bad. Super bad. Ayy, super bad.